I'm so excited today to dig into part two of the analysis of the 2024 Federal Annual Report. Part one, we looked at revenues and what made the province tick. And then part two, we're going to actually look at expenses. And so you'll remember in part one, we actually broke down where all the revenue for the federal government was coming from. And if you remember, the revenues were primarily coming from our personal income tax, followed by corporate income tax, and then GST. And then we broke down some of the other revenues. All told, we actually have a great revenue scenario, and we've seen a huge increase of about 32% since 2019. And the fiscal revenues for 2024 are $459.5 billion. So can you imagine, if you were a company, you would have grown since 2019, 32%, you would have had revenues of $459 billion, and you would be really happy, don't you think? Well, now we're going to dig into the expenses, and we're going to see the true story. So let's kick it off, and I'm going to actually take off my jacket because this is going to take a little bit of analysis, and I want to walk you through. So if I start sweating, you'll know why. Okay, so the composition of expenses, right? As you can see, and I always laugh when I say this, the biggest expense of government is actually government. So the direct expenses, so the other direct program expenses, make up the biggest portion of expenses of the government, which we're going to break down in a minute, followed by transfers to the provinces. So it's interesting. We are looking at the pie chart that shows where all this money goes as a percentage, and the biggest expenditure is actually for federal government, and the second biggest expenditures is for other levels of government, so which make up almost half. Actually, it makes up half of all the expenditures of government. So imagine all the expenditures we're going to talk about in a minute go towards internal government. Very interesting. So let's kick it off. If we go to the next slide. So if we can see, now this is really interesting. The total expenditures, I'm just going to cut to the chase here because I think it's important we go through it and then we sort of think through it. The total expenditures of the federal government, now we're only talking the federal government, remember that, is $521 billion, right? So right away you say, okay, that's more than the $459 billion in revenues. Well, yes, it is. So, you know, that's what makes the deficit. And the interesting part is since 2019, these expenditures have gone up $175 billion. So in 2019, we had $346 billion in expenses, and now today we have $521 billion in expenses. So, and we're gonna go through. Now these expenses, they categorize them. When they do the annual report of the federal government, they categorize them into a number of categories, right? So the first category they talk about is major transfers to people or to persons, right? So these are, as you can imagine, they go to seniors and they go to EI and other programs which you're gonna talk about. Then they go major transfers to other levels of government. Well, that's an interesting one because that's the ones that go to healthcare and other programs. Then we have the smaller ones like our pollution pricing we talked about yesterday. And then we have direct programs. Now the direct programs are what goes to the federal government for the most part, which we'll break down in a minute. And then of course we have debt servicing, so the interest on debt. And then we have where our pensions and our benefit programs lie with the government. So that's where we're at. That's a summary of the annual report for 2024 compared to 2019. So let's kick it off. Let's take a look at major transfers to persons. And I'm going to start with the first one. This is the first line item in the annual report for expenses. And this is for elderly benefits. Now, as you can see, elderly benefits increased from 2019 by $22 billion. Now think about that, because that's a very interesting number. It was $76 billion. It is $76 billion. In 2019, it was $53 billion, increased $22 billion, right? So how many seniors increased? So that was my first question. I said, okay, Paul, are there a lot more seniors? I know a lot of baby boomers are starting to become seniors, you know, of course. So I said, okay, that's the reason. All the baby boomers have shifted up a quarter of the population. And we told that, you know, boom, bust, and echo. We've been told that over the years. We're going to see a lot more seniors. A quarter of our population is going to be seniors. So it's a big number. We know that. We know it's coming. So I took a look, and in 2019, there were 6.5 million seniors in our population. And then in 2024, there's 7.6 million seniors, right? So that's from StatsCan. It's easy to get. Anyone can get it. So that's an increase of 1.1 million as far as the seniors. So 1.1 million people either shifted into the seniors category or arrived in Canada under our immigration system and got into the seniors category. So that's an increase of 18%. So then, head scratcher, I'm sitting there and I say to myself, okay, you know, I've seen an increase in $22 billion, and I'm wondering to myself, why do we only see an increase in population of 18% when there's a 42% increase in the amount that goes to elderly benefits? Well, then I broke down the per capita payment, and lo and behold, we gave the seniors a raise. So somewhere along the way between 2019 and the middle of COVID, everything happening, we started to index the, or increase, they call it indexing, but it's just an increase, it's a raise. They started to increase the senior payments on average by 21%. So that equated to a $22 billion increase in 2024. So, you know, that, does that go away? I doubt it, quite frankly. This is a big voting block. A lot of people, this is important for governments. They usually provide this group with a good stipend because, quite frankly, they're the ones who actually go to vote, and they tend to vote in the direction they want based on the benefits they get. So, you know what? We've seen the increase, and we know why that line item has gone up. So if we go to the next one, major transfer to persons. This is the unemployment insurance support measures. So yesterday we talked about this, right? We talked about the fact that companies had increased their amount to EI significantly since 2019. So I think yesterday, if my numbers are correct in my mind, companies contribute $29 billion to this. We actually take part of that $29 billion and we pay it directly out to the unemployment groups. This hasn't changed significantly, but you can see, quite frankly, unemployment has gone up. So we took a look at it and we said, okay, unemployment was 5.6% in 2019. Which equates roughly to, throughout the year, total year, 1.2 million people on EI at any point in time. And then it went to 6.7%, which equates to about 1.5 million. So that has 308,000 additional people going on EI. So that roughly, the numbers roughly equate to 25% increase in the number of people now on EI. So, you know, fast forward through COVID from 2019 to 2024, we're now talking about a 25%. So 25% more people are on EI than in 2019. Therefore, we see roughly a 22% correlation in the increase of unemployment or employment income insurance benefits and support measures. And we end up with a very large total of $23 billion in this category, which roughly is the same number as the amount paid by corporations into EI. So it's very interesting. Years ago, and a lot of you who are new to government financing, EI was always a pretty significant profit margin for the government. Companies paid into it, fewer people were on EI, and the additional monies that came from this were used for other programs, i.e. healthcare and other things. So just keep that in mind. So this one's kind of gone up significantly. It's seen a 22% increase. And I'm still waiting for one to go down, by the way. So carrying on, this is one of my favorite ones. So the other major transfer to persons is the children's benefits. So for those of you who get children's benefits, you're probably wondering, how much does this number equate to as a total across the country of Canada? So, well, it equates to $26 billion. And that's a really big number. So $26 billion, it used to be in 2019, $23 billion. It went up 2.4 and it went up 10%. So the interesting thing about this, and you know, I dug into the numbers because, you know, for those of you who like podcasts, you constantly hear about the birth rates going down. So birth rates are a topic across the world. You know, we're all, Elon Musk is telling us that Japan's, going to disappear and because birth rates are so low. Well, you know, I dug into it and I said, okay, how many people how many children are in this category? And what's the difference and why did it go up or down, right? And it went up. So if we go to the next slide, you'll see Canada has now joined the lowest low fertility countries. So we are now in a category with South Korea, Spain, Italy, Japan, with 1.3 children per woman or less, right? So imagine that. You know, I know Italy has talked the same as Japan about the culture disappearing because of the lack of birth rates and the death rates being higher than the birth rates. And therefore, over time, the true Italian culture will disappear because of that. So we're now in the same category. So then you say to yourself, okay, well, then why did the number go up 10%? Because now the number of children in the category has stayed the same or gone down. So why, right? Well, again, we gave ourselves a raise. We decided to index this number because we think that that will keep the program going. The interesting thing about this is that isn't it time, in my mind, and this is the question that I asked the audience, isn't it time to start working to see if this program is achieving the objectives? So if the program was put in place to increase birth rates and it's not increasing birth rates, I think at some point it behooves us to actually sit back and say, okay, what do we need to do? And if that's an objective of the government, and you know, if you look at immigration policy, child programs, all those things, those are all things that have to be looked at together because they're all the same issue. It's increasing your population and how to move your population forward to increase the population. So again, you know, when you look at major transfers to persons, this is one that has seen a significant increase. Rolling on to the next one, and the next one is other major transfers to other levels of government. Okay, so this is, you know, the one where we give money to healthcare, we give money to fiscal arrangements to other programs. So as you can see, you know, from the chart that's on the screen, we had an increase, this is a pretty significant increase, of $13 billion since 2019 to 2024. So it went from $52 billion to $65 billion for transfers to healthcare and social programs. So 25% increase, right? So for those of you saying, well, man, I'm not getting good healthcare, I'm not getting, my wait times are too high, I can't get a doctor, you know, the federal government has increased this by $13 billion since 2019. So the question becomes kind of value for money effectiveness, efficiency. Those are all the questions that are on the table now, because it's not a fiscal dollar monetary matter. It basically is how the money is being spent. Is the money being spent correctly, right? Fiscal arrangements and other transfers, which we're going to talk about in a minute. This is another one. This has gone up 48%. So we went from 23 billion to 34 billion since 2019. So it's been a significant increase, right? So you look at these two programs and you say to yourself, we've gone from $75 billion to $100 billion. So $25 billion up. So we've seen basically a 32% increase in spending in this category. A 32% increase, right? So our population, so then my mind, right away, my mind goes to, okay, these are all kind of social programs, you know, whether it be health or social. Have we seen a shift in the population that would warrant such a large shift? Well, the answer is no, right? We talked about it in part one of our series on the annual report, the 2024 report. We've seen our population grow by about almost 2 million people since 2019. So 2 million people, you know, 1.959, went from 37 million to 39 million in a few years, and from 19 to 24. And so we've seen a 5% growth in our population. But we've seen, as you see on the next line, we've seen a 19% increase per capita in spending on healthcare. So just think about that, right? Our health and social programs, we spend, from a federal perspective, right now in 2024, we spend $1,657. In 2019, we spent $1,396. So we didn't see a population increase that matched the increase in spending for healthcare, but we did see a significant spending increase, right? Almost three times the spending increase to the population increase. And it's really interesting, because that's, you know, a lot of times you'll hear people say, you know, it's because of all the new immigration, our healthcare is so bad. Well, that doesn't correlate. So that's a misnomer. So the numbers don't play out. And that was kind of surprising to me, because I kind of bought into that. You know, I'd be at parties and people say, you know, we brought in a lot of immigrants. So, you know, and I'm like, I don't know. Did we bring in that many? And would it have dwarfed the system that bad? Right. So because we only brought in 5% increase since 2019 to 2024. So, and, you know, I just put this on the slide because, you know, I Googled, of course, you know, when I was putting this together, and I said, what are people in the world saying about our healthcare system? Well, they're saying, you know, it's a decentralized, yes, it's publicly funded, you know, it's equitable, and it provides healthcare to everyone equally. So, you know, and then it actually talked about the fact that we are one of the highest. So being one of the highest spenders in the world on health. So, but we still face challenges such as wait time, shortage of professionals, and low hospital beds per capita. So it's really interesting, you know, because the numbers do not play out. And I think as we get into the other podcasts on healthcare, we're going to delve into this more, but, you know, the numbers sure tell a different story than what we perceive and what I perceive, for sure. So going to the next slide. This is interesting. So this is the next category that we saw up on the board. And so, which is, again, you know, the major transfers to other levels of government. These are the other transfer category that we saw went up significantly. This includes basically legislative growth in Canada, health transfers, social transfers, equalization transfers, housing build funds, and more health agreements. So if you look at that 100 million number, it's pretty much all centered around health. Because I was looking at the number and I'm thinking, okay, I see what we spend on healthcare, it's gone up. And then I see this other number, you add the two together and it's $100 billion from the federal government. And it pretty much is all healthcare and childcare transfers. We go to the next one. I talked about it yesterday. This makes me laugh every time I look at this. So this, you know, and I put it, government program canceled in an odd way, pollution pricing, right? So we all remember this story in 2024, carbon tax, right? We got into the election. All of a sudden, the prime minister stepped down, Prime Minister Trudeau stepped down. No one wanted to take credit for carbon. He was worried about it prior to. So he started the pollution pricing proceeds rebate. So we created a pollution pricing program, a lot of P's, and we were raising $10.5 billion, and all of a sudden there was a flow of people against it. The premiers were up in arms. Everyone didn't like it. So rather than get rid of it, we started to rebate it back to people. So we created a program that actually generated $10 billion in revenue, and then we created a rebate program that rebated $9.8 billion. So there's a delta, a small delta. It's a small revenue line still, but you know, it's a very odd way. And of course, politically driven, it's something that started, should have never started, because quite frankly, it didn't have support across the country, and it ended up dying on its own speed. So if we go to the next, these are the direct program expenses. So I'm not gonna talk a lot about COVID, the emergency wage subsidy. I think there's still, you know, listen, there's no point in any of us having any more. I guess we could go back and have more COVID discussions. We could probably analyze it to death. We'd probably find out what happened to all the money, and I think we'd be probably disgusted. I know we'd be disgusted. But you know, we're still trying to get some money back. So we do get some money back. We got $420 million in 24. As you can see, there back in 19, there was a fuel proceeds amount that was spent. So we got a rebate for fuel. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but it was like $100, and I think we all got it, and maybe once or twice. And that happened, and then it went away. So there's, you know, a couple odd programs in the beginning. But then you jump to, this is what I talked about earlier. I'm going to talk about the operating transfer payments last on this sheet, but I'm really going to go down to operating expenses. So the increase in operating expenses, which is the second bottom line on this sheet, you can see in 2024 was $140 billion, up from $98 billion. So almost a $42 billion increase, or a 42%. And this is the government expenses. So this is basically what it takes to run the government, personnel, everything else. So since 2019, so just get this in your head, right? We saw a 42% increase in government spending on direct government expenses, including personnel. So it grew to $140 billion from $98 billion. You know, this is what you're hearing more about, more and more. But, you know, that is the detailed expenses of what's being spent. Then I go above and I go to the other transfer line. And this is more of the slush fund, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But that grew, and it grew more. It actually grew more, if you think about it. It grew from, $51 billion to $96 billion. So this one almost doubled. This one went up $44 billion, 86%. And this one's like a slush fund, so what I'm going to get into in a minute. This is like the catch-all of catch-alls for government, right? Anything, program, interest, they want to put money into, they basically put into this fund. So if you look, so if we go to the next slide, as we talked about this fund, so the other transfer payments fund, the EVRY fund, I call it, our payments to natural resources, First Nations, transportation, gender equality, defense, justice, etc. This one goes on and on for pages and pages and pages of contributions, payments domestically, foreign payments, programs in other countries that don't, you know, this one's hard to track. It's, like I said, it's pages and pages of detail of where money is going and contributed and spent by the government for different programs. But that one grew, like I said, it almost doubled. Operating expenses, as we talked about, are the expenses of departments, agencies, consolidated crown corporations, and other entities. And this is basically also includes the personnel costs. And of course, because of COVID and all the non-repayments of the loans provided during COVID, has a significant, around a $10 billion, from what I can figure out, bad debts baked into it. So that's why we saw and it's just not COVID related. It's just not a one-time payment. It's the increase in government. Okay, let's hit the next one. So this is one, and we're gonna spend a lot more time on the next show, but this one I'm just gonna spend a few minutes on, talk about, and then I'm gonna leave it because we're gonna do one more part of the series, and the next part of the series is called Debt and GDP, and we're gonna spend about a half hour breaking down where the debt is, how the debt works for Canada, how the payments work, and then also talk about how it correlates to GDP and the GDP performance of Canada going forward. So as you can see, this is no a little bit of a big surprise for some people, I'm sure, but our interest on our debt has basically doubled. So since 2019, to 2024, we saw a $24 billion increase in our interest payments for the country, 103% increase, from $23 billion to $47 billion. So again, you know, this is the charges, the interest on our interest-bearing debt. And this is offset slightly by CPI adjustments on our real return bonds. So this does have an income component of it, but it hasn't even kept close to keeping pace with what our debt component. So, you know, coming out of COVID, we all know we spent a ton of money, which we'll talk about. It ballooned our national debt, to trillions. And now this is the price we're paying, which is overwhelming and very tough. 47 for the size of our country right now, $47 billion on interest payment is a huge number. I don't think people contemplate how big that is for the size of our country and the size of our GDP. So, okay, so the next one, actuarial losses. So this is kind of a new, and I won't spend a ton of time on it because I know people, you know, this is a more of an accounting actuarial number, but this is an interesting number, which I'm gonna also spend a little time in our next podcast when we talk about debt and GDP. I'm gonna talk a little bit about pension performance, right? So, because we do have some large government pensions, CPP and others, that we do have standing. And this basically is one of the challenges that we do have, is that as our pension liability became bigger and our obligations became more overwhelming, we now face the issue when they don't perform. So when they underperform, so think about it, when the actuaries go in and they say, we have so many people in this pension, these people will probably live till 84 and your pension performance doesn't match what your obligation to pay them is. So you have to now take a write down or take a loss because you're not able to meet your commitment. So you got to set up a liability, create a loss, and this goes up and down, right? This is a number. The new accounting standards, I think, came in and they require it to happen. So You're going to see more of this, and it's probably a good thing to keep track of. Actually, when I was fishing around and taking a look at this number, I got very interested in it. I came to the next slide, and I found out, which is very interesting, the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, board of people who invest all our money we give them, revealed that 12% of CPB assets are invested in Canada, the lowest ever. So the largest chunk, $714 billion of the fund, 47% is currently invested in the United States. So, you know, just to, I found it very odd. And you can see by the chart, the red is us in Canada. So you can see in 2005, I'm gonna take my glasses off for this, 74% of this fund was invested in our own country. And over time, actively, someone made the decision around, it looks like, 2015, 2016, to basically switch and invest most of our money abroad. So I don't know how that makes a ton of sense. I'd like to actually at some point do a podcast and meet with someone from the CPP and find out why that makes a ton of sense. And then finally, you know, and wrap up, I just wanted to go through the last slide, you know, because this was a very interesting podcast for me as we dug into the numbers. We started off the podcast, right? And we talked about revenue and we said, okay, aren't we in a good spot? We have $459 billion in revenues, up 38%, sorry, more than I thought, 38%. From $332 billion up $127 billion. So we have revenues that have grown since before COVID, 38%, you know, to this almost a half a trillion dollars. And we've actually managed to outspend it by actually incurring $521 billion in expenses for a deficit of $61 billion. So we started off, you know, pre-COVID at a deficit number, which we thought was really high. Remember, yeah, I don't know, for those of you who are a little younger and, you know, the early 2000s lived through balanced or positive budgets, you know, seeing a deficit of more than $10 billion was like outrageous at a time. And now we're at $61 billion. We've seen it increase $47 billion. So as we delve into the next podcast, where we start to talk about debt and we start to talk about pensions and we start to talk about GDP, we're going to see the implications of the deficits. And that's really important for a country. Again, remembering, we're a country of 40 million people. We're a large landmass, but a small country. To have deficits that are now exceeding $50 billion, it has extreme consequences. So stay tuned, subscribe, and we hope to see you soon for the next podcast.